The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
All right, on to bank earnings. And we got a couple of the big ones today. JP Morgan Chase and Wells Fargo. He has a position in both, and he's on now to talk to us about some drivers and strategies expected from the banks this year. Doug Scioca, CEO and partner at Kavar Capital Partners, joins us on the RingCentral phone line. Doug, welcome.
Good morning, Vonnie. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Well, it's a beat, but after taking out one-time items for JPM, can you really take out one-time items and call it a beat?
You know, I think you can call it a beat if it's the final quarter that you ever have to mention Bernie Madoff. I think that all around is a good thing, anecdotally.
Well, Doug, before we get more into the earnings, is JP Morgan getting a bit of a pass here? They are settling on allegations that for 15 years, people work for JP Morgan could see the red flags and ignored them. You know, other people transgress, other industries, they, you know, face the long arm of the law. Is JP Morgan getting a pass here?
I don't know, Kathleen. It's funny. A few years ago, I remember reading Harry Markowitz's book titled
And Harry Figured It Out.
Listen. And he did. And sadly, I don't know how many different divisional offices of the SEC missed some of the same things, presumably, that J.P. Morgan had missed. So I think the court of public opinion is certainly going to be harsh and understandably given some of the problems J.P. Morgan has had to defend in the past. But I think that the size of the settlement, the distraction of the management team, hopefully they're putting that behind them. And I doubt they would probably characterize it as having been given a pass.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was a year when J.P. Morgan spent, get this, $23 billion on legal settlements. I mean, there's something wrong when a bank has to spend $23 billion on settlements, right?
It's incredible, yeah. I mean, the magnitude of that number. And I think, right, going forward and looking into the future, and very little has been mentioned on either one of the conference call transcripts that I read this morning, but so much is going to drive off of these banks successfully managing the taper, assuming, and this is important, right, that the taper by the Fed is indicative of underlying economic growth. But a big part of that, right, is they've got to take the opportunity to clear the litigation deck because they cannot have that amount of money set aside for legal reserve to be built back up because the money is going to need to be better spent competitively on things like shareholder returns, which is going to include acquisitions, which is certainly going to be mandated that they preserve some capital. And they're going to have to spend some money in broadening the revenue sources of specific business units because, as both companies indicated, it's no longer profitable to be singularly reliant on the mortgage market.
Yeah, I mean, mortgage fees down almost by half, 46% in the quarter. By contrast, consumer and community banking up about 19%. I mean, great, but it's not exactly the business that JP Morgan Chase really wants to be chasing, is it?
I don't know, but I think it is somewhat of a back to basics. I think that certainly is a little bit of a charm offensive and taking more of a grassroots approach, Bonnie. But I also think that both Wells and JP Morgan had very good quarters in asset management and wealth management. And then Wells specifically broke out some of the benefits that they've seen improvement in their retirement services units. This is going to underscore the necessity to broaden volume-based businesses in the absence of high-margin-based businesses, particularly in light of a Volcker rule world in which they're going to exist.
So where do you see that occurring, Doug? I mean, is it going to be some underwriting, investment banking? Retail banking is only so profitable. What are the most likely avenues for J.P. Morgan to pursue?
Asset management.
Okay.
I think asset management, wealth management, I mean, the commercial and community bank is important. But keep in mind, Kathleen, J.P. Morgan was also number one in M&A activity, number one in investment banking advisory activity. Mm-hmm. That herd will thin competitively given the challenging operating environment, again, in which their competitors are going to have to exist.
So, Doug, how about the Fed taper? The Fed is going to buy, you know, steadily fewer bonds each month. It's still paying the banks interest on excess reserves, right? So they can make a little bit of money by holding their money at the Fed. But ultimately, presumably, they would rather see a stronger economy and lend out money, right? So they could make a lot more money. Where do we stand in that cycle for big banks like and JP Morgan in particular?
I think it's the loan growth is soft. but it's positive. And that's going to be and continue to be very important as they establish what are going to be more and better positive net interest rate margins. What's equally important, Kathleen, is they increase loan volume. And that should be a function of the elevating velocity of money, right, which should be attended to an improving underlying economic environment. They have to do a better job in this part of the cycle of controlling their loss provisions. Because if they get to where they start to see an elevation of losses on those loans, it's going to completely obscure the benefit of the widening net interest margin. It's going to actually take a bite out of their positive cash flow as opposed to increasing it.
Well, the stocks haven't been doing too badly. And would you be adding to positions? Or, I mean, and also compare with us to some of the other banks. Do you have positions in the other banks?
You know, we can't comment on positions in buying and selling of certain securities at our firm, but I think it's suffice it to say, banks have always straddled the line between being early cycle interest rate sensitive investments and mid to late cycle economically sensitive investments. And the good banks are going to reallocate human, intellectual, and actual firm capital into identifying areas of economic growth that are coincident with improvement in labor markets, with challenges that may exist in inflation, but ultimately that get them in a position to where they're making loans and establishing positive spread on that allocation.
So would you say then that J.P. Morgan has been doing that successfully?
Yes.
Okay. How about Wells Fargo? Profit rising 10% to a record, although at the same time, they're starting to trim staff and expenses as we've got rates rising and demand for home refis is slipping a bit.
Slipping quite a bit. And in fact, they've always been a harbinger of the vibrancy of the domestic mortgage market, Kathleen. And if you think about what they have begun to do well ahead of some of their competitors within the mortgage industry, they began to cut headcount. They began to recognize that the refi market was cresting. They were focusing more on home purchase environment. But when the rates go from 3.5 to 4.5, there's been a reduction in the allocation of people making commitments to big homes. So they've had to see the writing on the wall. They subsequently have very successfully transitioned into more wealth management brokerage and retirement services. I think that is only going to be a thing that continues. Keep in mind, if you compare the two, historically, going back 5 years, Wells Fargo made a very good, in hindsight, acquisition from a cultural integration standpoint when they bought Wachovia. That's put them on probably a little bit clearer glide path to managing the transition in the underlying economy than J.P. Morgan, which is forced into arguably making two very poor culturally integratable acquisitions in Bear Stearns and Washington Mutual.
So, Doug, given your point then, we're going to have a race for, you know, the most custom in the wealth management business. Who's going to win that race? And are we going to see a raft of new products when it comes to wealth management and retirement accounts?
You know, I think, Bonnie, that a big part of shareholder returns, which has to be the focus for banks big regionally and even on a smaller regional banking size, even set down to the community banks, shareholder returns for banks are going to have to compete with elevation of distributable cash flow because now they're going to compete against plain vanilla bonds. A big part of elevation of cash flow on a high margin basis is through the increased volume. Increased volume begets a tendency toward acquisition. I think that's going to be a big part of what we're going to see. I think as opposed to staffing up for mortgages, securitization, which no longer exists, proprietary trading, which has been Volcker ruled out, we're going to start to see an allocation of capital to build assets that are bolt-on, complementary, and increase volume and distribution.
So, Doug, we have some other big banks reporting this week, Bank of America, then Citi. How does B of A look to you? What are you looking for in that report, in that earnings report?
I think it's been so well telegraphed, Kathleen, and I think that what we saw today within, you know, one or two standard deviations is going to be the rule and not the exception. I think we'll probably see some beats. I think we're going to see, you know, loan loss provisions decline. I'm going to see credit quality improve. I'm going to get a demonstration of loan softeningness, reallocation of internal efforts away from mortgages back toward asset management. I think this is going to be a pretty good indication of what we're going to see across the board.
So you're saying the same thing with Citi?
B of A and Citi would be very similar.
Are you pleased with the new management that's not so new now? New chairman, new CEO, are they on the right track?
I think so. I mean, I think that anytime you have a transition, it's viable to give them a grace period for execution. I think that this year, 2014, will be sort of a proof in the pudding year. And I think that given the transition in the environment, the underlying improvement in credit quality, the banks have fewer excuses.
Doug, did Jamie Dimon say anything on the conference call that made you start a little bit?
I didn't actually listen to Ivana. I read some transcripts, sure. But no, he is certainly one of the most quoted people in the universe. And they also have an investor day that's coming up on the 25th of February. And I think any real impactful statements he's probably going to reserve for that point.
He was asked if he was going to resign, and he said that was a matter for the board. And then he was told that he was the chairman, in fact, of the board.
I read that. Yeah,
okay.
Read that.
So what about the Volcker Rule, Doug? Is it something that, you know, that the banks are already sort of discounting and adjusted to? Or is it something that they're still going to try to modify so they can keep some of the lucrative trading going that they would like to?
I think probably the latter, Kathleen, and maybe because in consideration of the poor year that sort of their independent counterparties, a lot of the hedge funds have had as it relates to total return on their investment philosophies and strategies, I think the banks can probably find ways to straddle the lines within a much more transparent and lower fee environment, that they could find ways to maintain portions of that business, provide satisfactory returns to their shareholders or their investors in that capacity, and still see it make a nice profit contribution to the underlying enterprise.
Really quickly, Doug, will they contribute to GDP growth going forward, you think, the big banks?
The big banks? Yes, they do. They're the engine, right? I mean, ultimately, they're the conduits to get capital into the economy. You have those that are very well positioned, hopefully have paid for some of the sins of the past and are on a very good spot to make that contribution.
Doug Tsioka, CEO, partner at Kavar Capital Partners.
The Hayes Advantage, weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2, or on Sirius XM Satellite Radio Channel 119. Copyright 2014, Bloomberg LP.